Majority World is a programme about social justice, global issues and anything multicultural. And on this week's edition, originally broadcast live on Near FM on January the 12th, 2006, on 2 minutes, we have interviews from the visual held at the Aviation Authority building near O'Connell Bridge in the heart of Dublin City. On 7 minutes, we have music from Joanne Kearney. On 11 minutes, we hear from Stephen Thornhill of Colab on agriculture beyond the WTO in Hong Kong. On 25 minutes, we hear from Abdul on discriminatory security measures in Britain. On 31 minutes, we hear from Michael Shanahan, who's a musician from Waterford. We hear some of his music and we hear about his prognosis for the music industry worldwide. On 55 minutes, we hear from Kieran Allen on the People Before Profit conference going on in Dublin this weekend as well. My name is Robbie Sinnott and I hope you can join us for the next hour.
We'll begin with something I did actually on Friday. I went along to the aviation vigil because 330,000 US troops actually went through Shannon Airport in 2005. So there were some people down, not exactly a protest, just a silent vigil, just commemorating those who actually never made it back. Which I think is somewhere in the region of, I think there's 15,000, including the wounded. So I think it's 2,000 officially dead as well. So this is what happened there.
So this is US military out of Shannon?
Yes.
We're outside the National Aviation Authority building at the moment, Friday the 7th of January.
Yes, we are.
And you're an American citizen, are you?
I am an American citizen.
And you're against the war, I take it?
I'm absolutely against the war. Have been since before the war.
What's your reaction then to Ireland's complicity in the war?
Well, it's pretty disgusting. And, the common reaction is, well, if we don't go along, then the U.S. will pull its investment, which is not true because during all the bashing of the French that was going on in the U.S. 2 years ago, U.S. investors increased their investments in France by 40%. So the U.S. investors are going to go where the profit is. It doesn't have anything to do with patriotism.
There's an argument that Shannon gets 40 million euro extra per year business.
It's blood money. I mean, if that's worth it to you, I think that's awful. I mean, I spent 2 days with Cindy Sheehan here in Dublin a couple of weeks ago, and hearing her stories about her son going through Shannon. I mean, he was an Irish-American, Catholic altar boy, going through Shannon and having the locals there chat him up because his last name was Sheehan, and how excited he was, to be in Ireland finally after dreaming about it, only to be sent to his death. And Ireland helped kill Casey Sheehan. So if the people in Shannon are comfortable with that, I guess that's all right, but I'm not comfortable with it.
They call it Route Irish, the road going from Baghdad Airport to Baghdad City.
They do, and there's also a Camp Dublin, where Lieutenant Colonel Theodore West Husing was found with a bullet through his head back in July. I believe it was July. It might have been in June. He's the highest-ranking U.S. officer to die in Iraq, and he was living at Camp Dublin, which was described as hell on earth. And they think it's, are they mocking the Irish by calling the worst road in the world Route Irish and the worst camp in the world Camp Dublin? I mean, and the Irish think this is, and they're enabling this.
Do you think there's a good prospect of impeachment this year?
Oh, God willing and the creek don't rise. I mean, there should be a good prospect, but, unless Monica Lewinsky comes along, I don't know. It's okay for Bush to screw the world, but, we need an intern.
Tell me, you were saying you spent some time in Alaska.
I did.
And you were just on the tree line there. Can you tell me about that?
I was. I lived about halfway between Anchorage and Fairbanks. I lived 50 miles from Denali National Park and homesteaded there in the late 60s and early 70s, and also lived in Valdez prior to the pipeline. And it's the most beautiful country I've ever seen in my life. And the changes that are going on there because of global warming they're going to impact all of us severely.
What have you noticed yourself?
Well, there's been an annual increase in temperature of Alaska of about 2 to 3 degrees Fahrenheit, which has brought in the spruce beetle, which is eating down all the trees. And people may not think much of that, but it's a very fragile environment up there. There aren't a lot of trees when you get up close to the tree line. Now, that doesn't seem like a big issue, but 70% of Alaska is north of the tree line. So the vanishing tree line means that the tundra is going to disappear. The caribou live on the tundra. The wolves live on the caribou. And without, I mean, we're talking about the extinction of large numbers of species that are fairly high on the food chain. And if it can happen to them, it's going to happen to us.
I heard recently that Congress has put a block on oil exploration in Alaska. Does that seem hopeful then?
Well, yes, but that still isn't doing anything about the problems that, you know, we have in the U.S. that are, you see, proliferating here in Ireland, one person, one car. I mean, as long as people keep living off fossil fuels, our planet's going to continue to die. We need alternatives, and we need them now.
That's great. Kathleen, thanks very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bertie Iscariot has sold Shannon for Bush's war's shame. But I have a choice. I could have had Irish taxpayers have to subsidize the U.S. war occupation in Iraq, courtesy of Bertie Hearn government. Well, maybe I'll go with that one for
you. You can turn it either way.
Also some planes passing through Germany, like through Shannon. Because the states have some facilities in Germany. But I don't know exactly the numbers and so on.
Initially a dream.
And that was Joanne Kearney, or spelled Kearney indeed, and Joanne was from Blanchardstown originally, now living in Iceland, and that was a song called Moon, and I think the melodies that she has are quite extraordinary, definitely unique. We have on the line a man called Stephen Thornhill, and Stephen is from an organisation called Kolav, and Kolav at the moment are running a conference, or they are on Friday the 13th, it begins anyway, and it's actually to do with Hong Kong and beyond the decisions that have been made there. And first of all, I suppose, Stephen, you're very welcome to Majority World first.
Thank you.
Okay, and the World Trade Organization is 11 years old now, and people might have heard about the talks in Hong Kong. Can you give us a little bit of a review what they were about, the development around Doha, all this sort of stuff?
Well, yeah, the WTO talks for in this current round, the Doha round, is supposed to be a development round, so it's supposed to be focused on developing countries and improving the trading position for developing countries. At the moment, only 3% of global exports are accounted for by developing countries, for example, and they account for over three-quarters of the world population. So it's a round to try and improve the situation very much for the majority world.
This is very much linked into human rights, but why is Kolav, for instance, specifically focusing on agriculture in this conference?
Well, the Cork group that we have here, Cork Action Network, has always focused on food security issues and the impact of agricultural support policies in developed nations like the US and EU, and the difficulties that causes farmers in developing countries, for example, you know, produce being dumped into their markets at subsidized prices.
Is it not true that, like, even though the Western countries might be more interested in getting their hands on services and industries, perhaps, that agriculture really affects the poorest in the world because they don't have very much else to live off?
Well, that's right. I mean, it's what most of the people are reliant on as the main income. And most farmers, for example, in Africa are subsistence farmers. So, you know, you're not talking about a tremendous threat on the world markets from these people. And yet these are the people that are being damaged by a lot of the practices that occur. So we're very keen on the idea of looking at where WTO is taking us. And so far, farmers around the world seem to be very concerned, both in developing countries and in developed countries, about the route that they're going down. The conference is a real chance to, you know, to question this and to say, well, look, is there a different road ahead, and is there a better way that we can have a fairer system for farmers all over the world, rather than this route that we're going down, where we're only going to be, you know, looking at perhaps only 20,000 farmers in Ireland left that are going to be commercially viable within 10 years' time.
Well, that's right. But are the impacts of trade rules the same then on the small farmers from the north and the small farmers from the south?
Well, in some ways they are, and this is the area that we're particularly focusing on in Cork, is the area of common advantage. I mean, are there areas that we can actually look at that can be a benefit to farmers in both areas? And one of the things that farmers have a problem with is the percentage share of the final consumer price that they receive. And that gap has been widening and widening over the years, you know, to the point now that farmers receive a very small percentage share of that final price.
And the price hasn't gone down for consumers generally, has it?
Well, it hasn't, no. I mean, most of it's been absorbed within the distribution and retailing sector. And a lot of it, of course, has been captured within the profits of very large transnational companies and retailers. And, you know, this is an area that we're focusing upon more and more as one in which we can improve the situation for farmers around the world, particularly on improving the share that they get through direct marketing and through local food.
There's a very obvious impact as well on cities like Dublin, for instance. You've got masses of people converging on cities, and rural life has been destroyed because the small farms have been complete. They can't survive anymore.
Absolutely.
A real impact.
Absolutely, and we'd very much support a different way ahead, a different approach, which looked more at focusing on local food and encouraging farmers to produce for local food markets. This has an environmental benefit, of course, as well, in reducing the amount of traffic we have on our roads and reducing the emissions as well.
Reducing the amount of flights, for instance, of lamb from New Zealand to Ireland, or perhaps the amount of boat transport and such products as well, I suppose, and potatoes made in Israel, when we got potatoes in Ireland, for instance. Or
well, I certainly think the increase in fuel prices is going to have a big impact in the level of distribution that we've seen around the world.
Mm, if governments are forward-thinking enough, and I suppose you do have Alan Jukes, I suppose, speaking at it, but actually, speaking of the right, can you tell us about subsidies? Are subsidies the way forward? Should local food producers be subsidised then to help them out?
Against the big boys. We would certainly be against any form of export subsidies, and it's good to see that the WTO has actually said that they're going to be removed now by 2013. But as far as direct payments go, there may be a situation where farmers do need some kind of income support to bring them up to the rest of the level. But it shouldn't be in such a way as that it would distort trade and actually cause other countries to suffer hardships. So, for example, where direct payments allow produce to be produced at below the cost of production, and then exported to developing countries, well, that certainly isn't something that we would like to see happen in the future.
And as well as that, I suppose free trade doesn't really work when it comes to scarce resources. So most of the subsidies actually go to large farmers. So it's when you try to redistribute and get the balance right.
Exactly. And it seems crazy the way the Common Agricultural Policy System has now changed with these payments, and so such a large share of them go to the biggest farmers of all.
Okay. Can you tell us, by the way, about the implications then for Irish farmers with their form of cap in 2013, no more? They might still get the farmer's dole, as they call it, the direct payments.
Well, the direct payments, there's no plans to remove those at the moment, but I think that they are going to be a lot more transparent in the future, and there probably will be pressure on to reduce those over time. For example, they're frozen at a level, which means in effect, in real terms, they will decline over a number of years.
That's really an incredible amount of control, isn't it, that the European state has had on food produce, while everything else has been going to the right. For instance, farmers now, people know, Big Brother knows exactly what they're growing and what field and how much they're actually growing. And that's incredible, government, not interference so much, as government definitely controlling what is produced.
Yeah, there is a degree of that, and particularly with programs like Set Aside, where farmers have to set aside a certain percentage of their farm area. Yes, there is certainly more control and more regulation, but that's also consumer driven. I think consumers want to know where food supplies are coming from and want to know, you know, which farm the beef came from. And again, that could be a good thing, because any move away from commodities towards something that's more product driven, so that you know that it's perhaps organically raised, or it's a certain type of milk or beef products, then that must be a good thing.
Stephen, can you tell us about EPAs?
Yeah, economic partnership agreements. So what the EU is currently negotiating with the African, Caribbean, and Pacific countries that have historical trading links with the European Union. And the idea is that the EU is trying to encourage them to have free trade with the EU. But of course, this free trade means that EU exports of services and industrial manufactured goods would also get into their markets free. And this is something that we think is potentially going to be quite damaging for these countries, because after all, they're at a very low stage of development. The way that you actually encourage or protect your industries is through tariffs and enable them to actually develop and flourish. So it looks to be a very unbalanced approach to helping these countries, in that the EU seems to be looking at getting a much greater share of the benefits than the ACP countries.
Now, last year, I know the sugar subsidies were cut by 40%, but that actually hit the Caribbean countries fairly hard.
It did.
So that was the European subsidies. So how come it hit the Caribbeans fairly hard? And how come the Brazilians and the Australians, the big farmers, the people who kill human rights activists in Brazil, for instance, benefited quite well?
Well, I mean, the ACP countries will have had preferential trading agreements with the EU, so they have benefited from that higher sugar price over the years, and now with the cut in the sugar price, they're looking at losing a vast amount of money, and it really will have a very big impact on a lot of countries. I think St. Kitts and Nevis, the whole sugar industry is about to be wiped off.
That's right. They've gone into tourism now.
That's right. Yeah. But, so I mean, they've been affected particularly hard.
But I thought subsidies were supposed to keep prices low, but this actually, you're saying that European subsidies kept the sugar price high artificially.
Well, what happened with sugar is they've brought the subsidised price down, so the supported price has come down, and they've replaced it with direct subsidies. So, you know, we're looking at replacing one thing with another form of support.
I don't know if it's more transparent or less transparent.
You're thinking, it's more transparent in a way, in that you know exactly what the direct payment is for that drop in prices. So that's the thing. The EU has changed its form of subsidies now towards decoupled payments. Mm-hmm. So in fact, the payments you receive, you don't need to produce to receive that. Although you do need to meet certain standards and keep fields in good condition. So there are some costs involved.
Can we see a world that's post World Trade Organization? I mean, maybe world government is good for things like the environment, where things need to be done, and maybe even if people are disobeying the laws and the rules regarding that. But in a case where market doesn't really fit with scarce resources, I mean, is there a case of saying, let the liberalisation agenda, definitely, of the WTO, get rid of it? Maybe get rid of the WTO altogether?
It needs to be a much more realistic approach than it's currently taken. You know, I think you're right. You need a different look at. And we were hoping that the Doha development round would do exactly that, would focus on development first and not free market theory. So, I would like to think that the campaigning that our own organisation is doing, along with all of the other similar like-minded organisations around the world, will eventually lead to that better world order, yeah.
Okay, well, Stephen Thornhill, we'll have to leave it there, I'm afraid, but best luck at the conference tomorrow.
Thanks very much.
There's politicians, farmers, activists and everybody getting along. That's Stephen Thornhill from Colav down in Cork, and we were supposed to have Conal O'Queeve, and hopefully we'll get Conal O'Queeve again another day, because I suppose we can go into so many different issues, because trade is just one angle. There's also environment, there's also debt, there's so many different aspects, I suppose, and trade is just one piece of it, a very important piece, no doubt. We have here Abdul, and Abdul, originally from a village in the north of India, you said, is that you weren't going to be very specific on that. Is this what state, for instance? Is it in Orissa? Or
it's the state is called Uttar Pradesh.
Uttar Pradesh.
It's one of the biggest states in India.
Most populous in India, is it?
Yes, yeah. Yes, it's quite populous.
What would you like to speak to us about?
Well, basically, I am volunteering for Near FM very recently, and I was putting together some pieces of that can be aired in the future. Myself and Thomas, another friend who is a volunteer as well, we interviewed a few people in England just to see what's happening in England and what difficulties are people facing in the wake of the war on terror. You know, it's been quite shocking, those interviews.
Do you think that it's religious-based, some of the attacks? It's anti-Muslim, do you think?
Well, do I think it's not necessarily anti-Muslim. I do not believe that it's anti-Muslim, but every attack has to have a victim, a scapegoat. In the Nazi Germany, you had the Jews as the scapegoat. In Russia and the Soviet Union, you have the Chechens as the scapegoats. And during the British occupation of Ireland, you had the Irish as scapegoats. And today, Muslims are becoming the new Irish in Britain.
Mm-hmm. And we're not talking in terms of employment here and cheap labour or anything. This is coming down to state control. When they use an outside group, a scapegoat, like you say, and this actually means that they can actually increase their control among their own population. Even
absolutely.
If Muslims are their own population as well.
I mean, absolutely. It is very surprising. I mean, a person who goes to England from nowadays, especially from Ireland, people tell him things like, don't get shot and don't run when you see if you see a policeman. or don't run behind a bus, or don't run behind the tube, because they feel that there's a chance that you might get shot at, precisely because you fit the description of the ideal terrorist that they say, you know, brown color maybe, beard, maybe a long dress. So it's a very stereotypical representation.
It's a very big about-face turn for Britain, because I suppose traditionally Britain would have been seen as quite liberal with what let's call ethnic minorities. For instance, London is one big, I suppose, cosmopolitan arena. It's just a beautiful cosmopolitan place.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, the way things are going, the British anti-terrorism laws, and there's a report published by the Islamic Human Rights Commission clearly saying that the British anti-terrorism laws have become modern-day witch hunts. Basically, anybody who looks or who fits the description can be stopped and searched and probably detained without any proof or for no reason for a period of 7 days, and now it's going to be 28 days. I mean, it is horrendous. And the report itself highlights a number of cases that prove this fact. You know, there's the case of a guy called Babar Ahmed, who was arrested in the early hours of the morning at 5:30 in the morning, dragged out of his bedroom. He was sleeping with his wife. He was kicked, he was punched. He was taken to the police station. All the way through, he was strangled, kicked, punched. And by the time he reached the police station, his solicitor met him, and she immediately recorded 52 bruises. After a medical report, when he was released a few days later with no charge, the medical report said that out of the 52 bruises that he had, 2 injuries were near fatal injuries. And then he was released on no charge. Mm-hmm. And there was no charge, they couldn't get any charge against him. But yet again, on the behest of the American authorities, on their request to extradite him to America to be tried on terrorism charges, which have never been brought forward, and nobody knows what are the charges yet, the British government has decided to extradite him for no reason.
Yet the only people the law can't touch are those who make the law, or those who claim to operate on its behalf. So as we also seen in Greece recently, about 27 people, I think the only thing they had in common was their Islamic religion, and they were taken in for interrogation and quote torture by British Secret Service as well. But I'm sure we'll hear more of this in the pipeline as well, and we'll definitely hear the 3 of your reports in the coming weeks as well. So Abdul, thanks very much for speaking with us.
Community Radio for North East Dublin, Near FM 101.6.
Thank you.
That's a piece of music and sound art from a man called Michael Shanahan, who hails from County Waterford at the moment. And Michael, first of all, I suppose there's something beautiful about it, especially when you know it's raining and lashing rain outside, about listening to this in the comfort of something, a warm studio or a warm house or wherever people happen to be. There's something beautiful about the way we see. I think that was a sampled rain, was it?
It was, actually. It was what I'd actually done with that particular piece was I had recorded an open fire. Mm-hmm. And then just as I'd finished recording it, simultaneously a heavy downpour of rain started outside, and I just went out and recorded that for 5 minutes and then worked the two together with keyboards, and then put a waterfall from somewhere down in West Kerry in on top of that as well.
And the keyboard reminds me of Jean-Michel Jarre, the type of keyboard you use, but that's probably depends on the make or something that you were using at the time. It just reminds me of Equinox, I think, one of the things that he'd done. But the other thing, I suppose there is something that brings people together, that what you're doing here probably isn't music in the traditional sense of the word, but it is, perhaps I get from it a commentary, that sort of harsh element outside, and although it was gentle rain, it wasn't wind, it didn't sound like too much wind or anything like that. And then the crackling fire inside and the juxtaposition of the two. Maybe music is a way that people come together in routine.
I suppose so. And I think perhaps that if I look at particularly some of the Northern European ambient type of electronic music, or just electronic music generally, and there's something quite unique about it, I think, in that even if you look at some of the harsher weather that people up in places like Iceland would have, and you look at some of the music coming out of Iceland, like Sigur Rós, and I suppose to a lesser degree Björk, and there's so much of it is very much a product of their environment and the fact that people, you know, they're harsh climates there, and there is that community thing, I suppose, going wherever you get that type of climate.
Mm-hmm. I suppose the imagination as well has got loads of time to ramble when you're maybe there's something more social about climates that are more external that then bring people more out. Maybe not. I mean, maybe as well as that music is like people who go to the session in a pub, in an Irish pub, to sort of congregate while it's lashing outside, and they can sort of pretend that they're apart from all that, and they can just live in their own nice fantasy magic world, especially in winter. You know,
true, quite true.
But what I was going to ask you about, about music generally, I suppose, what's happening to the industry at the moment? Because you actually put your stuff up online. I don't know if you put it all up. Maybe it's a recent departure for you, but people can download it on MP3.
Well, you have had some significant changes, I suppose, particularly in the last few years, with things like the internet, where people can, if you want to distribute your music to a large audience, you can do so without a traditional record contract if you feel like doing it, and you can put your music online either as free downloads, or if you feel like doing it, as downloads where people can download a low quality version for free, test it out, decide whether they like it or not, and then pay for the real thing. In my case, it makes sense for me to say to people, look, you can download almost CD quality stuff for free and enjoy it. If you feel like you'd like a printed copy on CD, then you can buy the thing.
It's like publishing in the printed is actually going to publish your own books. You can get it free online, and if you want an actual book, you pay for that then. So it's a sort of a parallel. But there is a question then of what it's going to do to the industry. Is there going to be any such thing as record shops in the future?
Well, I think for sure there will be. I think that as well as, okay, you're going to have your, I suppose your high street stores will probably battle to try and sell the top 20 albums, and they're competing against the likes of the multinationals, and that's a battle for them there. But I do think the specialist record stores that deal with things like indie music and even electronic music, dance music, I suppose even some of the more obscure metal stuff, I think there's well and truly a place for that type of store, and I don't think they're under threat in any way.
If people can go online, for instance, to a specialist, let's say, I don't know, to a Shan No site, for instance, or they can go to or a heavy metal site, a trash metal site, a Megadeth only site, or whatever, you know, so they can get even very rare recordings there. Why would they actually go through? It's just the whole thing about browsing.
Well, I think, I remember, I mean, even looking back years ago, I remember looking at internet habits of Europeans as opposed to Americans, and at the time, and I'm sure so much has changed in recent years, but at the time it was, there was a study carried out, and it felt that American folks would happily go around to their local stores, look at what they wanted to buy, then go online and buy it, whereas we were the opposite. We do all our research online, but we still like the idea of the interaction and the social part of going into a store, dealing with the local person there, and buying what you want to buy. And I would even see that, even for example, with something like Warp, a record company called Warp Records, who would be involved with a lot of ambient music and current electronic music. They've got an extensive website. You can go and listen to every one of their artists, and you can buy anything you want to buy on their website. And even as someone who's operated within the whole internet area for many years, I would still find it preferable to go on, look at what I want to buy, then walk into my local record store and buy it.
Well, I know that, for instance, some people go to the library and they copy CDs for free. In fact, what may be able to happen soon is that people will be able to go, even the record stores will go online to actually download the thing and put it on CD and get something in the background, just printing off whatever print is to go along with it, you know. So it might be easier for them to stop the wholesale, because the other parallel is to actually have us going around making our records and just dropping it in to as many stores, but that takes so much manpower. You just put it up online. You know?
Sure, absolutely.
For the independent artist, certainly. So it may spell the end for the large companies. Would you have a lot of, I suppose you'd be, a lot of tears in your coffee over that one?
I would like to see anyone losing a job anywhere, but I think,
Officers and arms manufacturers, definitely. So I think that maybe if some Sony director has just spent their life trying to rip off the public, I mean, why? And most of the artists that sign up don't see very much.
You bet. I mean, I know that even, for example, there are a lot of artists who are unhappy with things like iTunes, because the artist gets something like a cent out of every time, every 99 cent. The majority of the money is shared between Apple and the record company. So, I mean, it's hard to have sympathy for these people. But I think in some cases, the artists themselves, particularly artists who've got a bit of clout, can stand up and be counted. I mean, I look at a band like Radiohead, huge band. They don't even have a record contract. They made that choice a few years ago that they weren't going to jump in and grab the first multi-billion dollar deal. They released a DVD through their own website for something like 12 quid without a label involved at all. I think that artists can stand up and be counted. And I think that at the same time, I think a little bit more ethics within the industry, at that, what you were saying, that high level where the managing director of Sony Records can sort of stand back and say, you know, I'm making so many billion a year, do I really need to squeeze people to get another few billion when I can't spend it anyway?
Well, that's just probably the way the capital works, I suppose, or capitalism, as they call it.
Sure.
People never have enough, I suppose, and especially in such high-flying a job. But it's an interesting scenario where people go along and will say, well, I might contribute to your bank account because I sort of like what you do. And maybe it'll get to the extent that people will be shareware-ing so much, or sharing files so much, that the only way people can make a living is actually going out gigging, like the old-fashioned way.
And, golly, there's nothing wrong with that either. And I'm sure that there are... I mean, I know it's an extreme here, but I think you could even look at a band like the Rolling Stones. I don't know. I mean, you would know this far more than I would, but when was the last time the Rolling Stones had a number one single? However, they will sell out any city on the planet that they travel to.
John Doyle across from us will probably know that answer.
Right.
But it's 1969, but that'd be my guess from, you know, painted black, or maybe it was 68. Anyway, that's completely irrelevant. Please continue.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, a band like the Rolling Stones, they're no longer making money on records. I mean, I know they've got an album out, A Bigger Bang, that they've been plugging and saying it's a great album. I don't even know if it even reached the charts. But I do know that they're hoping to get about 100,000 people into the Phoenix Park. They'll have no problem doing that. And that's where they're making their money. I mean, they could come out and give the albums away for free and still make money. And I think that you could even look at bands like, in the States, bands like the Grateful Dead, who pioneered the whole idea of you go along to the gig, you leave your name, you hand over 10 quid extra, and a few days later, a studio quality copy of the concert you were at arrives at your door. Okay. I mean, I know that that's been perfected and brought to a whole new levels in recent years, but I think, you know, bands can tour, make money, and still make a few quid on their albums, you know.
Okay, well, John has handed me a note which I can't actually completely read, but it's Terry Lee Lewis. Jerry Lee Lewis, The Sound of Rain Against the Window, and I don't know what this is.
What is, Robbie? Jerry Lee Lewis, he likes the sound of rain against the window when he's lying in bed. He sometimes has a machine to create that sound.
All right.
Should send him one of your CDs.
You see, that's great. But finally, I suppose before we go into the next track, what's the whole idea of music? If you can get a computer program, for instance, that'll do amazing things with art, for instance, like Windows Media Program, for instance, what it has in its visualizations. I mean, you could go to Mike Oldfield realized that, you know, these can do incredible things just by themselves. You can have tailor-made music when you walk in, depending on the sort of atmosphere or ambience you want, you know. And where do you see music going as an art form if this takes over?
Well, I think I know it's possible, it's easily possible to sit down and virtually churn out acceptable electronic music without any thought whatsoever. I know that's the case. However, I think that a point has to come in any piece of music where, and I don't care whether it's electronic music or it's a bunch of kids with guitars and drums, if you got music and the people involved are honest about what they're doing and they've got a genuine feeling for what they're doing and they're willing to deal with the fact that sometimes you make mistakes, I think that'll always come out in music.
And back to the social, back to the raw element.
Yeah, I think so, and I think that even electronic music, I mean, I've done work, live work, where you're there with a laptop and you're there with keyboards and you get things wrong, and the odd bum note and the odd bit of inspiration that hits you on the spot where you just improvise and your audience improvises or other people working with you improvise. And I think that even if it's what appears to be clinically cold electronic music, you can still have that heart in it when you've got people who are honest about what they're doing. Yeah. It's all about honesty, I think.
Okay, well, Michael Shanahan, the best of luck to you in the future, and we'll play out with one of your tracks, right?
Cheers. Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
I think in that sentimentality, kind of like rule the day when they should have been just a little bit more clinical about it. Okay, what I'm really saying is, okay, again, this is off the record here. When you have the band of recording,
You can download Michael Shanahan's music at www.mixile.com.
Right, so we actually have on the line Kieran Allen, and Kieran is going to be telling us about privatisation, poverty and people power. It's a bit of a conference that's going on. I think it's starting on Friday the 13th in Cassidy's Hotel off O'Connell Street. Can you give us a little bit more detail on it, Kieran?
Well, it's as you say, that you have the titles there. This is a conference that is organised by activists who've come together from different social movements, different backgrounds, different political outlooks, but united in the belief that there needs to be a strong alternative to the profit agenda that is destroying this country, that is being put way ahead of people, and is leading to a situation where everything from open space at seasides is being privatised to Aer Lingus is being privatised. That's really what we're objecting to, and we don't think that this argument, you know, about profit and how the priority is taken over people is getting enough prominence. So we're hoping to pull together a conference, different activists getting organised to put across a different view of the world.
And it's a bottom-up approach, I suppose, rather than the globalisation approach like the WTO we were speaking about earlier on.
Well, it's very much a bottom-up approach because most of the opposition is coming to this government. Real opposition is coming from grassroots people, whether they're in the unions, getting organised on issues like Irish Ferries and pushing their leaders into doing something, or at community level where people, if you like, organise against overdevelopment, cutting down on public spaces, putting more, if you like, high-rise buildings into public spaces. All that's driven from the grassroots, from the bottom up. And I think the majority of people in this country, the majority, I'd stress, are against the whole value system that's putting down people's interests and people's needs and putting big corporations first.
It seems a bit bleak that people are sort of bought along like lemmings. I mean, you see what's number one on Top of the Pops and stuff, and you wonder, like, what's this thing on the mobile phone thing, the frog or something, you know? And you wonder if, you know, what's all this about? Or maybe that's just a taste thing. But even the stupid decisions, like, spending $800 million on a Lewis that doesn't work, and maybe buses could have done the job equally well. You know, there's loads of this stuff going on.
No, I agree with you, there's loads of stuff going on, and you make a good point. I mean, for example, Lewis is a public-private partnership. It's run by a firm called Connex that insists that workers have no right to take industrial action, you know, tries to push everybody into one union, that is involved in other countries in ripping off the state sector, and in some cases, in fact, this has been known in Britain, producing bad railway lines. Okay, so that's what's going on, so I agree with you completely on that. But I don't think you should be pessimistic, and I think that the point about it is, when you look at this country, we have seen a massive outpouring of people power on the Irish Ferries issue. You know, over 160,000, 170,000 people on the street, getting organised, in some cases telling their employers, I'm sorry, we're going to walk off work until we get a proper threshold of decency established. And when you look at it, it took 170,000 people and, you know, people sitting in on their ships just to get the minimum wage, right? That's what it takes in this country. You've got to organise, and that's the only thing that gets results. And that's what the People for Profit is about. That's why we're encouraging people to come along 7:30 on Friday night to Cassidy's Hotel in Parnell Square to kick off, and then Saturday morning in the Teachers Club Parnell Square for a whole number of sessions on privatisation, immigration, all the sort of main issues that affect people.
So it's organisation and tactics, and I suppose a lot of discussion, because you're going to have Vincent McGrath from the Rossport 5, Aretha Fagan, an activist from St Michael's Estate, and you're going to have loads of other speakers as well.
Vincent McGrath is an interesting case. As you say, he's come down from the Rossport. He's been jailed. There's an example of a man and four other men who inspired this country, because all the time we're told you can't do anything about Shell, the big corporations, they decide, they work hand in glove with the government behind the scenes. And here you have a campaign, about 20 people initially, then growing into a mass movement that really is putting manners on these big corporations and raising questions. Why is our natural resources being handed over? I mean, we could have the best health service in the world if we, the people of Ireland, had control over what is now looking like quite big reserves off the West Coast. If that money was used, even like has happened in Norway, to fund a proper health service, a proper welfare state, we wouldn't have the problems that we have at the moment.
Yeah, Norway, I think, owns 33% of the conglomerate that owns the Ofteraspor. But Kieran, we have to leave it. I mean, there's so many issues, because you're talking about resources, agriculture, service, industry, all the idea of the private enterprise, the common sort of trust that's behind general belief and government policy and stuff.
Yeah.
It's a lot of large issues, but I'm afraid we have to leave it there. So everybody's welcome, and thanks very much for joining us in the program. We'll definitely have to get back and talk about loads of stuff some other time.
Okay,
but that's fantastic.
Okay.
But this is from us, Majority World. Thank you very much, and thank you very much to Abdul. And there's too many people really that I can't really mention them all now. And if you'd like to send us a message, majorityworld@nearfm.ie. You can also text us at, I should have given this out earlier on, 087-69-44-500. Always brilliant to hear from you. Although I haven't heard a great lot lately, I shouldn't have been sorry missing giving out the information at the beginning of the programme, but it's always fantastic to hear from you. So this programme originally went out between 4:30 and 5:30 on a Thursday evening. You can hear it again between 9 and 10 on a Friday morning, or www.nearfm.ie. Like every other programme, including Local Point, which is coming up next. Sorry lads, I'm a bit late.
Northeast Access Radio. This is Near FM.
Majority World is a voluntary production about social justice, global issues and anything multicultural, and was originally broadcast on Near FM on Thursday the 12th of January live.